Welcome to the Oxley Bond MotoGP podcast.
Hey everyone, it's the Oxley Bond MotoGP podcast back again with me, Matt Oxley, and my podcast partner,
Peter Blom.
And we have a very special guest this week, Dario De Wet from South Africa, although he's actually in London at the moment. So Dario is founder of the Monza Group International. He's a finance guy. He works for a motorsport sponsorship. He's got a few irons in the fire in MotoGP at the moment, but obviously they're top secret. So I don't think it's him that's going to buy MotoGP, but maybe it is. I don't know. And he's also a former 125cc champion from down in South Africa. So, you know, he loves his bikes, he loves racing, and he knows about money. And what we're talking about today is the news that probably most of you have heard, is that it really does look like Dorna is about to be sold, and looks like to the people that own F1, Liberty Media. And Dario, if we can go sort of straight to you, and you tell us, is it happening? Is it just bullshit? And is it good? Is it a good deal? Is that the right money? Like 4 million euros? 4 billion euros. What am I talking about?
4 billion?
Yeah. 3.5 million pounds, about 4 million US dollars. So how do you see it all, Dario?
Yeah. So thank you, firstly, to you and Peter for having me back. Really appreciate it. You know, I think this is such a topical discussion for various reasons we'll unpack. In terms of, you've asked a couple questions there. So let's start off. Do I think it's going to happen? Yes, I do think that a sale is going to happen. I alluded to it in that first article I wrote in the fourth quarter of last year around why I felt MotoGP needed new shareholders. Carmelo Ezpeleta was a little bit more vocal in terms of the media, I guess, poking the bear around, you know, Dorna would consider a sale. I had originally written that article on the back of rumors I believe that this was going to happen. And here we are. I think it's more a case of when that sale will happen and to who. Now, the rumors suggest that it might be announced before the US Grand Prix next week. That would fit the narrative very well, considering I believe that there's been a concerted effort to try and attract US attention as much as possible. We've seen that with the kind of Dan Rossomondo coming on board as the CCO of Dorna. We've seen that with Trackhouse acquiring the RNF team, right? We've seen that with some of the broadcasting rights movements in the United States, and just the natural way that Dorna's tried to emulate Formula One through that fail of an Amazon show to try and replicate Drive to Survive, and a concerted effort to try and bring more GPs into the region. So would Liberty Media make sense at face value? Yes, they did an incredible job with Formula One. You know, they've almost 4x'd the value of Formula One in itself, and quite interestingly, grew the value of teams in Formula One by around 3.8 times, right, in the past couple of years.
Wow.
I think that being said, will the deal go ahead? Now, that's an interesting discussion point, right? Because the European Commission, as most know, and it's been covered quite well by the media, blocked CVC's ability to own Formula One and MotoGP simultaneously. We're now in a position since then where Dorna's acquired World Superbikes at that time, right? So they have World Superbikes and MotoGP. Dorna has made a considerable effort to ensure that that MotoGP almost replicates Formula One more so now than ever before, aerodynamically, how that affects the racing, we can discuss, and we kind of did last time, right? In terms of the calendar, then...
Yeah, and sprint races and so on.
Exactly, right? And so Now it makes you question even more how this deal will get through. Now, that being said, the desire for Liberty to own both doesn't mean that it can happen, but also doesn't mean that it can't happen, because there's also a broadcasting rights component to it too. So it's going to be a very interesting next couple of days and weeks if this does happen. But, you know, we can talk a little bit more about the other acquirers, you know, if we want to, but I'll pause there and see what you guys think.
So, I mean, Liberty could buy it, and then 2 weeks later, the EU Commission says, no, that's a monopolistic situation. You can't own the two world's two biggest motorsport championships, and then they have to sell it to somebody else? or would the EU Commission get involved first?
So that you would signal an intention to buy. And from what I understand, there's been a lot of movement, or there have been quite a few key individuals in the MotoGP paddock recently from Liberty's side, which would suggest that the interest is there, right? Now, they could signal to buy it, but then there would come a diligence process, which would then involve the likes of, you know, the EU Commission, etc., to ensure that, you know, it's not monopolistic in its tendencies. Now, that being said, you know, we all know that we've seen that the acquisition of sporting brands, particularly motorsports, has become quite attractive in recent times. And, you know, Liberty has been very intentional behind their acquisitions and their portfolio. And they've built that brand up from scratch incredibly well. But what I think is quite interesting is some of the other acquirers that were mentioned. Now, just something to go back on quickly before we go down that avenue is, you know, naturally, the likes of Dorna Sports and most businesses and organizations have PR agencies that help to push narratives. You know, that's something that, you know, everyone does. This article coming out by the FT, maybe it was well placed specifically to ensure that it encourages further interest from other buyers, and or is an interesting mechanism to try and ensure the bidding process is exacerbated or encouraged to spark higher amounts of investment value, higher amounts of interest, and just naturally puts more eyeballs into MotoGP, because, you know, you also find creative ways of attracting new audience members too, because you might have some people that have seen that image or heard about this thing and gone, wow, look at the lean angle of that guy on that bike. I want to watch this type of thing. Just a small anecdote that I thought was interesting to pick on.
Yeah. What I just want to make out to everybody is that, we're going to talk about the deal, but what we really want to talk about ultimately is, if a deal happens, whoever it is with, will it make MotoGP a better show for the fans? Will it make it a worse show for the fans? Will it make it cheaper? Will it make it more expensive? So we are going to get to that. We're going to talk about that. Have you, Peter, you've been quite quiet. I know finance, like me, isn't your area of expertise, but have you got any questions for Dario?
Yeah, when I hear Dario speak, more and more questions come up to me. First of all, Dario, we speak about one company, as I call it, that's interested, but you mentioned there is probably more. Are there any names, and where do they come from? Because this one is very logic. They come from Formula One, Liberty. So the next thing we need to speak about is, are they going to do the same with MotoGP as Formula One or no? But are there other candidates, probably, you can say, and where do they come from? What do you think of that?
Sure. So naturally, the Middle East is making a lot of acquisitions at the moment. It's very clear. You have the likes of the Saudi PIF, the Qatari Investment Fund. You know, it's no rumor that they've been interested in the likes of Formula One. Whether they choose to go down the MotoGP avenue remains to be seen. I know that, you know, obviously the FT has mentioned this. What's very interesting is WME, which is Endeavor Group, and TKO, right, which is owned by Ari Emanuel. I don't know if you remember, there was a show called Entourage that used to be on TV about almost 20 years ago. Guy Jeremy Piven played an agent called Ari Gold. That's Ari Emanuel. And, you know, they essentially made UFC successful. If you understand the Dana White story and how they built that brand as an undervalued asset, almost replicable in that sense of where MotoGP is now. That was less baked, actually. The second being their acquisition of WWE, which is World Wrestling Entertainment. And this is almost a very exciting third pillar to add to the stack. I know that they have been very intentional as talent agents behind Formula One. I think I stand to be corrected that they might have signed Charles Leclerc in recent times to manage him. And so MotoGP kind of fit their image, and I think would have been quite an interesting and attractive opportunity to bring into the United States. So essentially, we have two types of buyers. We have the United States and we have the Middle East.
Right.
I don't think there's anyone else in between.
No China?
Yeah, well, you know, that's a whole other scenario. I mean, I don't think there's any Japanese buyers right now, judging by the performance of some of those manufacturers, but who knows? Maybe the article sparks on the move.
Yeah, I did also look into kind of TKO, and they also, so they're big into wrestling and they're big into martial arts. And I thought, well, that's in my mind, MotoGP is probably the martial arts branch of motorsport, isn't it, really? So that might be quite a nice little fit, you know?
Yeah.
And I guess if Liberty aren't allowed to buy it, then TKO might just step in and be, I mean, basically, we've just got all these people with lots and lots of money going around just buying up sports and so on. There's a lot of that going on at the moment, isn't there? And I've been told, and I don't want to be boring, but someone told me that private equity companies are kind of struggling a bit at the moment, you know, because of the interest rates and so on being high. And so would that be a reason for Bridgepoint, who's a private equity company, to say, hey, we just need to offload something to stick some money in the bank?
No. So I think a couple of points there is just the natural economic cycle and the way interest rates are currently means that, you know, if you look at alternative investments, which is essentially what private equity, venture capital, et cetera, are, right, one would typically gravitate towards those investments because the financial upside was larger. This is just a separate point, Matt. And so, you know, for most, if you can get a quite a decent interest rate, you know, as it is, then, you know, it puts into question whether one wants to risk their capital and what returns they can get on that basis. You got to remember, you know, obviously these investments are both a combined balance of strategic value, i.e. an ecosystem play, as well as a financial upside. I don't think that that has anything to do with this.
Sure.
I think that if you look at Bridgepoint specifically, they've had the asset for a long time. It is very clear that it's quite stale in terms of where MotoGP and Dorna's potential can go and where it should be. And a willing buyer, willing seller, right? There are sharks in the water that want to buy this up. They're prepared to pay a premium. And hey, it's a big check. If you could make at least a minimum of 2x on your money, well, why not? Peter, you look like you're itching to ask something.
Yeah, something came up with me. I mean, I was badly prepared for this interview with you, Dario. Sorry for that, because it's not my thing. But you speak so well, and then suddenly I get all sorts of ideas are popping up. So when they're stupid, Sam has to skip them later because I don't want to look a dick at. But one of the things that comes up, Dario, is let's imagine Liberty.
Yeah.
Does Liberty at the moment also owns other car racing classes? Like at the moment, Dorna owns World Superbikes.
Good question. From my understanding, no, they have the Formula One group. I think that, you know, that being said as well, though, and I stand to be corrected, because this is a good question you ask around commissions, because, you know, we're talking specifically about the EU commission in this instance. But, you know, in terms of Liberty, they probably gravitate towards US-based sports like some NASCAR, etc. You know, geographically, it's only focused on the US, right? So there isn't much conflict of interest there. That being said, you actually unlock a whole different portal. It's probably a separate podcast. Around Dorna being allowed to buy World Superbikes to begin with, because essentially those two are even more directly relatable. You know, and so I want to touch on something here. So Dorna made around a 33% increase in turnover in 2022. So it brought them to around 475 million euros, right? They still ended up with a loss of close to 8 million euros at the time. Now, the thing is, you know, we've spoken in the past about how they took on debt and paid their shareholders out a dividend. And, you know, it's very much almost like anyway. So that was interesting. But what they've done, unfortunately, and this goes back to Matt's question around what impact this has for viewers and those that are passionate about the sport, is it's made the sport very difficult for teams to attract sponsors. Right. Look at the current MotoGP grid. Right. How many headline sponsors are there on these bikes? And I'm talking about factory teams. Right. Then you've got to think about satellite teams and the running costs involved in actually being competitive and at the sharp end and the focus on aero. And this is pre the 2027 regulations. It's hurting the sports. Right. It's not bringing the money in. OK. And so you see headline sponsors putting back, Ducati putting the brakes on spending, excuse the pun. Right. And quite frankly, Dorna doesn't seem to, in my view, give a damn about World Superbikes, which at the moment is putting together a great show, a really great show. And so this is a very subjective question you ask about how it's going to affect the racing. And we have to be very careful because in the case of Liberty, they bought Formula One. They almost quadrupled the value of Formula One's brand. And you know, it's very big on social media and ticket prices are through the roof, which is an issue. Talk about that later. But the racing is damn boring. There's been no changes in the grid in the past year. I don't know. I just find it so boring compared to MotoGP. And that's an issue. But with the new regulations coming in, maybe hopefully they can come in sooner. I don't know. The other thing to talk about just before we kind of open things up is around whoever chooses to acquire Dorna Sports, right? Remember, they've got some options here. What are they going to do with World Superbikes? How are they going to influence MotoGP? And is the current executive committee within Dorna Sports going to stay the same, right? Does Carlos step in and take over Carmelo? Does Dan move around? Do they clean slate and bring in a whole bunch of new executives and then bring on advisors who understand the sport, maybe with a better balance than maybe some of the kind of older legacy crew that have been in there for a while? There's a lot of strategic consideration behind this aside from money, and that's what will affect both.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, what people really want to know is it going to cost more to watch than or not? I guess, I think Dorna in many ways have done a great job in the last 32 years. I think the best thing about MotoGP that they've done is the quality of the TV production. I think is fantastic. You know, the onboards, all the graphics. Mm-hmm. It's almost better watching it on telly than being there. In fact, I'd say it is.
Oh yeah.
You know? I mean, unless you've got a big screen sat next to a big screen, there's almost no point in being there, really. You know, the TV is that good. So they've done a brilliant job there. However, I think the time is right for a change. I think they've been there for a long time. They've taken it to a certain level. I think it needs a more international management setup behind it. I mean, Dorna is, 99% Spanish. I mean, bringing in Dan Rossomondo last year was, a big thing. And I think if you're an international sport trying to attract people from all over the world, fans from all over the world, you need an international kind of group leading the company. So you've got lots of different ideas saying, what we can do to get more fans in Indonesia is this, what we can do to get more fans in South America is that, and so on and so forth, rather than just having a group of people who all come from the same country and have got a similar mindset. You know what I mean? You just need lots of different ideas coming in. So I think if a new owner could do a better job, I really do, in sort of taking the sport further. Is that going to make it better for fans? I'm not sure. It might not. It'll certainly make it better for the people owning it because they're going to earn more money. But I guess the big thing is the two ways that you put a sport out there, a championship out there. You either do it free to air and you get a big audience, and then all the people involved can get sponsorship off the back of that audience, or you do it pay TV and you get a much smaller audience, but Dorna or whoever owns it can use the money they earn, get from pay TV, to prop up the teams, which is what they do now. As you say, there's just no big sponsors in MotoGP, really. I mean, there's just, since the tobacco companies went, it's really struggled to, it's always a weird, I think we talked about it last time, that it's a bit of a, to me, it's a bit of a class issue. You know what I mean? The people with the big companies tend to be run by people probably who aren't particularly into motorbikes. The multimillionaires and multibillionaires, they're probably not sort of big bikers. You know what I mean? So they don't look at that. Whereas Formula One really suits them because they want to go along and swan along and hang out with all their fellow multimillionaires. You know what I mean? Bikes aren't like that. So, I mean, do you think they would?
Yeah.
Do you think Liberty? I mean, what does Liberty do with Formula One? Is it all pay TV?
It's a good question. I believe yes. I can't tell you on a geography or a country by country basis, but yes. The two things I just want to point out there, which kind of answers your question, is intellectual property and big tech. And we spoke a bit about this before. Liberty was able to attract big tech interest. And for example, Google's involved with McLaren. Then you've also got some of the banks like Goldman Sachs is involved, etc., right? You've got different sponsors that are coming into the sport because they understand the value of the amount of eyeballs that are watching the sport on a daily or minute by minute basis. And I say minute by minute, despite the fact that there's one race a week, because the intellectual property is being reshared across social media all the time, right? And that is not happening in MotoGP because I believe that the IP is typically controlled by Dorna. It's a very old school way of thinking. And again, this is where the US holds critical mass. I've lived there. Social media habits are different, right? These things are particularly, we spoke about this before. I know this sounds funny, but the crashes, the lean angles, the closeness, this is exciting stuff, right? You don't have a halo. You fall off that bike, you can really hurt yourself, right? Now, I know some people are going to say, that's disgusting that you think that that's entertainment value, but motorsport is entertainment, right? There's a lot of similarities between motorsport and the music industry, right? But none of this is really played up. But there's a lot of content there for whoever comes in, if they choose to democratize access to that IP, right? We're at a really interesting point where you can really fundamentally create change change and interest across all generations, all demographics, and all different backgrounds, right? And so that then encourages what you just spoken about, where in F1, it's typically the millionaire sitting in their ivory tower, drinking their champagne and having a business meeting, right? MotoGP is a little bit more raw, but there's an opportunity to do that too, because people, I've said this again as well, that I know that don't know much about bike racing, but they'll see something you reshare and they go, man, how did Bagnaia survive after being ridden over at close to 300 on the straight? Oh yeah, he raced the next week. What? And he finished third? That's insane. Yeah, you know, like Ricardo hurts his hand and it's all over the media that he has to have stitches. Oh well.
Yeah,
this brings me to the next, Dario. Don't know exactly how to say it. From my point of view, when I watch, okay, obviously I like MotoGP, I wouldn't be here without, but when I watch Formula One, and I'm so surprised by the interest all over the world for something that's just,
yes,
from my point of view, boring. Technically, it's unbelievable to understand it. Nobody really understands it. It's too complicated, but it's really, really important. And always the guy who designed the best car, he will always win, you know, and the best rider will always end up in that car, and then it's a boring show again. So first of all, the fact is, a lot more people watching Formula One now, even though it gets more boring and more boring. There is a mechanism there that's interesting, that almost scares me. Secondly, could this be a moment when you do a deal like this on this scale to sort of have a quicker type of influence on the rules, and not so much, yeah, in the end, the technical, I mean, good races are made by the sporting regulations in combination with the technical regulations. Now, the technical regulations, the way they are made, I don't really like them. Matt can explain that a little bit better than me. I don't like them. The next set of changes are coming 2027. We all know this is very, very important for the show, for the racing that we have. So basically two questions. How do you explain that Formula One is growing for more to, you know, no respect? If I say it without respect, it's a celebrity show.
Yes.
And you are very keen to watch it because you've seen so many times on social media all these names coming by. In the end, you are wondering if he's going to win again and how he's going to win. That's the only reason you look. MotoGP, you look because there's proper racing. There's big surprises. So I don't need to explain that. Secondly, so that to explain that from you. And secondly, is there a chance, like I said, that a buyer says, yeah, I'm interested, but this set of rules, nah, I don't like it. Maybe we change something at the moment. Does this open an option to create a change, Dario?
Yeah, so I think I'm going to answer those back to front. So to answer the second question, that would very much depend on the terms of the deal and the percentage ownership and the voting rights involved of those that choose to take over. Because if, for example, let's just say Liberty acquires Dorna Sports, but the executive committee of Dorna Sports stays as is and voting powers stay as is, then essentially, in my view, it's just an outsourced marketing mechanism to attract the United States, which then leads on to your first question, yeah, which is around how did Formula One do it? And I think it's a byproduct of two things. One is the fact of timing, because 4 years ago, we were all stuck in our house and weren't allowed to leave. And Drive to Survive appeared on Netflix, and all we did was consume content. And they were very smart because they got the right people to build the right narratives and essentially build a drama, right? Or a soapy, if you want to use old school terms, around the sport. And they made it seem a lot sexier and more interesting than it actually is. And this is the opinion of us because we're purists. We grew up on bikes and cars and involved in that space. And we are quite unique in that instance, right? But for most people who haven't, they come across this and that's what draws them in, right? And so that in itself was a really great springboard for Liberty to then use the speed and the spectacle and the drama associated with it. It's European centric, which has always got a certain level of kind of shine, polish, and class to it, to the United States. You go into a big clothing store there, for example, you know, European designers is a big thing there, right? It's a very sexy sport, right? And so MotoGP has got to kind of find that and create that. And, you know, again, this year, the Catalunya Grand Prix falls on the same day as the Monaco Grand Prix, right? Now, your argument could be, well, it's a completely different set of audiences, which could, just as a side note, be one of the key arguments behind why the European Commission will not block this deal. But In my view, as we've seen with Mugello in particular, because the old calendar, there used to be a lot of, you know, it was a week apart between the two. You'd have a lot of F1 drivers that would go to Mugello and vice versa, because there was a lot of fandom and a good relationship between the two sports, right? And so that's being completely cannibalized on that weekend. And essentially, if you're talking about viewership numbers, well, I mean, there we go. Because if you like both sports, what are you going to do, right? You're torn. So
watch MotoGP.
Yeah, well, that's what I would do, right? So that's kind of what I'm getting at. I mean, I think, as I've said before, this is really untapped. I think one thing I must really emphasize here, though, is that Dorna Sports is not just MotoGP. It's that World Superbike brand too, right? The one we came to love and know, which it's, you know, lost its way in recent times, in my opinion, purposefully, because the emphasis has always been MotoGP. By the executive committees, and we've seen that with the disaster of a World Superbike calendar this year. Oh, yeah. But technically, it's super competitive. It's got a bit of an image to it, you know, on his back. We've got Top Rack there. We've got close racing. It's exciting. Their motorbikes are more so motorbikes than rocket ships. And, you know, like you say, the regulations now for 2027 will be integral to how we see the sport shaping up, in the same way that finally a lot of these two-year contracts have come to an end in terms of rider movements, and next year will bring a lot of interest too, to see where everyone goes and what they do. But I just want to say one thing. It's very interesting to see how Raslan is getting involved with, I believe, the Aprilia team to help with sponsorship. And it's very interesting to see how Rossi has come up with this agency to try and attract sponsorship into the sport, right? And to me, that is a direct consequence of Dorna's failure to make the sport sexy and attractive to sponsors to come in. Because it's not just about the surface area of the bike. It's about everything else surrounding that product. A team is a product, right? Or the riders on the bikes are a product. Yeah. The team is whatever, however you want to term it, but you get what I'm...
Yeah, I mean, just going back to what Peter was saying, yeah, the rules are so important, and I completely agree with Peter. We're going to do a pod about this very soon, about how that has to change, you know, because you can't allow the manufacturers basically to make the rules. When you tell somebody in Formula One that, they go, what?
Wow, something to celebrate.
You know, it's using a non-PC term, it's allowing the lunatics to run the asylum, isn't it? But, and you know, we all have no doubt that MotoGP is better. There is no doubt that MotoGP is a better show. It's gladiators, isn't it? And the danger thing is a factor, but it's gladiators. It's an extreme sport. That's how it should be sold, you know? And, you know, if somebody like Liberty comes along and, you know, if let's say Liberty were to buy it, they'd straight away get Netflix to do a Ride to Survive, wouldn't they? Yeah? So you'd have a Ride to Survive series, and they would do, you know, I watch quite a bit of Drive to Survive. I'm not addicted to it or anything, but I enjoy it because sport is all about telling stories. It's all about telling stories. People want stories that excite them, and you know that football's a story. You know, the season is a story. You know, every season is a new chapter. Drive to Survive, you know, every episode is a self-contained story. Somebody said, okay, the director's gone, okay, we're going to tell this story this week, and it's going to be about this guy or this team or whatever. And sort of when Dorna have tried to replicate that with MotoGP Unlimited and then There Can Only Be One, they've just completely failed to tell stories. But they're basically like highlight programs, and I can watch them and enjoy them because I love it, but they're not going to attract any new fans, because it's like, well, you know, where's the story here? We're just going from one track to the next. And it's also about bringing out characters. We've got some fantastic characters in MotoGP at the moment. And, you know, even someone like Pekka Bagnaia, who everybody's... Not everybody, a lot of people think it's a bit boring and so on. In episode two, it's about 16 minutes in of There Can Only Be One. There's after he crashes out at, this is so 2 years ago, he crashes out at Sachsenring and is 91 points behind. He comes back into the pit and he is just throwing shit around, dropping F-bombs. David Tardozzi's trying to calm him down, but he's screaming and shouting. He's obviously so pissed off. He's crashed out of four of the first 10 races. And it, like, oh my God, this guy is not a little meek-minded little guy like he seems. He's as crazy as the rest of the motherfuckers. Why, you know, that piece should be all over social media of this guy losing his shit, because people like to see passion, they like to see anger, they like to see, you know, glory, they like to see, they want stories, and I think that's what Dorna has failed at. And I think more and more, that's the way sports are going. Like, okay, we've got the sport and now we're going to turn it into a story, which I have no problem with at all, because I'll still enjoy the racing. And if I want to watch Ride to Survive, I will, you know. And I think something like that will really bring in new people, you know.
Well, Matt, the Drive to Survive thing, now you brought it up. I was thinking, it almost gave me the idea, Formula One was so boring, they needed to come up with an idea to make it interesting, because there's so many millions going around these companies and these riders. They can't say shit, you know, that cost already $500,000. Bringing Carl Crutchlow and Jack Miller there together, you lose 10 millions in a minute. So you can't do that in Formula One. So they brought in like a Joker card, which is Drive to Survive, where suddenly all of a sort of things happened. And then it became interesting. Now we, on the contrary, in MotoGP, have a very interesting situation. We have lots of beautiful characters, you know. I can't wait to see Bezzecchi up front, because he's lethal and he will say it. You know, there's a lot of good guys. There is only one Nakagami. So we have it already. We almost don't need Drive to Survive, but we've seen it did the trick. So yeah, I can either say we don't need it, it's already beautiful. Nah, it can be done. So as long as we stay true to the sport and to the characters, it's obviously going to be a beautiful thing.
Yeah, 100%.
I was going to say, you know, you got to understand that it's the media, Liberty Media and WME or TKO are kind of media businesses, right? It's that essentially drives the value of these brands these days, and particularly through the likes of social media, right? And so, and correct me if I'm wrong, well, feel free to challenge me on this, but there has almost been a kind of I've picked up a negative bias, or say less interest by riders and some interest to really go and be fully invested in the media side of the sport, or doing their media interviews. It's more of kind of a laborious task as opposed to something they're excited to do. Now, of course, you know, their intention of their job is to win races, and there's a level of professionalism. But, you know, I will say this, we've seen it already with Acosta. We saw it with, cliche example, but with Rossi, right? Even Marquez, they're always smiling for the camera, engaging and interesting. So, you know, it's a very important factor, and it's become a very important factor in sport, in all sports, even the likes of, you know, rugby for that matter, you know, where players actually have to start building these profiles, because it has a direct impact on team value, interest factors, and sponsorship, and all the other implications surrounding that. So, yeah.
I think all the riders are fantastic with the media now, pretty much, you know, barely one or two exceptions. And most of them are pretty good at their debriefs, even if they've had a shit day. So they're kind of right to be, you know, made into bigger stars than they are. And they all deserve to be bigger stars. I mean, you've got, from what I hear, you know, you've got some of the guys in these independent teams, you know, the non-factory teams, half the teams are independent, who are earning less than six figures. You know, they're in the premier class of motorcycle racing, racing bikes that are doing 225 miles an hour. And, you know, if I was going to be paid 90 grand a year, I'd be very happy. But, you know, these guys should be earning more than that. And going back to the Drive to Survive thing, you know, I really enjoy watching it. And then now and again, I'll turn on a Formula One race and I'll get 10 minutes into it and go, Jesus Christ, this is so boring. It's just horrible. And I'll just turn it off. But I'll then go back another couple of weeks and watch Drive to Survive again. And so it doesn't matter even if you're not watching the race itself, because you're still watching the series with all the sponsors' names in there and everything. So the sport is still getting that, you know, interest, and people are seeing the brands and they're seeing the logos. So you're still, you know, it's still a good deal for all the people involved, you know. And you know, a Ride to Survive in bikes in MotoGP would just be fantastic. If it was done, get the same people to do it, just get them to do the same thing and just make superstars out of these people. Because, you know, from Fabio Quartararo, and like you say, Pedro Acosta, he's coming in and he's a bit like Rossi, shooting from the hip, doesn't really give a fuck what he says. And I think when the top guys start doing that, everybody else starts doing it. You know, when Mick Doohan was around, he hated the media, he hated speaking to the media. So basically all the other journalists, because he was winning, were like, well, that's how I'm going to be as well, you know, because that's obviously what you have to do to win, you know. And then, so, you know, I just think these guys deserve to be bigger stars than they are. And I think that would be great for all of us, you know.
I completely agree with you. And I have a feeling that what's going to happen is someone's going to acquire Dorna and MotoGP will become commercialized. And then especially all of us, will be the people who say, well, we were fans from the beginning, you know, real fans, right? Now, in terms of Ride to Survive, like you call it, it'd be interesting to see whether there is significant pull, because in this instance, a lot of sports have tried to replicate this. And so, you know, is there a bit of fatigue, you know, sports fatigue in the way that the Marvel Cinematic Universe has done incredibly poorly since Avengers Endgame because people are tired of superhero movies? But something, some unspoken superheroes are the Moto 2 and Moto 3 riders, which is something we haven't spoken about. MotoGP in a day has three classes of highly competitive, attractive racing, which is something that F1 doesn't have because Formula 2 and stuff typically isn't televised and no one really cares, right? So you got a lot of racing in a day, right? And that racing, as we know, it's motorcycle racing. These are gladiators. It doesn't matter what class you're in. These guys are literally putting their neck on the line. And so I would love to see more focus on, you know, emphasis on the up and coming stars of those series, injections of capital into those teams and the pipeline and the narrative. There's a narrative there around, you know, the, you know, Alonso Lopez's, et cetera, and where they could go. And, you know, even, you know, I work with the FIN Network Junior GP team, you know, the road to MotoGP, if, you know, where those riders end up and kind of, you know, that story. Because there are a lot of narratives we can put on here outside of the premier class, which also brings a lot more kind of, it tightens up really what Grand Prix motorcycle racing is about, because there's an educational component that's very key here that is critical in encouraging new audiences. And if anything, if we look at these acquirers going back to the deal, Liberty does have a track record of that. And I think, you know, that, again, just rehashing from the beginning, combined with Dorna's love affair with the United States and just the sheer market size of the United States, it would make an attractive, you know, target or acquirer, should I say.
Yeah, like you said, Dario, we have a great, and that's, but when you say it, I was thinking, yes, but also maybe no, because I love Moto2 and Moto3 as a fan, and I'll see they have different purposes. There is a different story behind all of that. The Moto3 is the young kids. They have already the third mortgage on the house, the parents to get there, and then all the pressure on these kids for 14, 15, 16 years just to get there. They are completely, no, there's just adrenaline and talent and balls to get there. The bikes are pretty similar, so that's the scene in Moto3. You need to do it there because everybody's looking for a new Marquez. So when you're young and you arrive and you immediately start to clean up the shit there, that's something really, really special. And still you're driving back in the van 8 hours with your parents. But it could be. Moto2, on the other hand, is already, you know, you're either there and lost it within 1 year because you don't have the special level, or you're there and then you need to be really quickly fast. Within 2-3 races, you have to put it on pole. Within 3-4 races, you need to win one, and then MotoGP buys are coming. If you're there for 3-4 years, start to win your first race, you're going to be the next Tom Lutti, Scott Redding, whoever, you know, Vitor Abad, and you're not going to do so. That's all, but you have to pass these guys first to get to the front and make a case and probably have a seat in MotoGP. So all three have their own stories, but that is a little but, and I speak for myself only, but there is so fucking much to watch on Sunday. I mean, I love cycling. This Sunday I can't leave home, but I need to leave home. I want to do my own cycling. So what am I going to do? What's three races? I don't think so.
Yes.
You know, if there's MotoGP and I'm not on it, I'm not there. Honestly, even when we do the pod from home, sometimes I just watch MotoGP and I go do something else on the day. And then later I look back Moto3, Moto2, because and I try to avoid it, which is almost impossible. So you sort of know. But anyway, you watch it. Do you recognize any of these things when I said it, Matt?
I would say that I kind of slightly disagree. I mean, you know, The first thing to say is, if I mean, the sport's already commercialized. All sports are commercialized. All sports are businesses. Just get used to it, and it's never going to change. Sports have always been businesses. You know, I mean, especially motorsport, because it costs a fuck of a lot of money. You know, you don't just like rock up at a racetrack with 50p in your pocket, do you? Even if you're club racing, you know, it's a business. Of course, it is. I mean, I love all the three classes as well, but I always think that I think to really make something of it, I think you need to concentrate on the big one. You know, I think people can, and I think that is one of the problems with motorcycling. It's got, in cars, there's Formula One and basically nothing else, unless you're a super fan, you know, and you're into Formula Two and World Endurance and GT and all that kind of stuff. But there's no doubt what's the number one, and so everybody gravitates to Formula One, and it's huge. That's why it's huge. I think in motorbikes, you know, we've got a lot of things, and I'm sure that's why Dorna are trying to drop World Superbike down, because they want there to be one championship. that everyone watches. That's the way in, right? And sure, if you're a super fan, you can watch Moto 2, you can watch World Superbike. But I think, to me, I think otherwise you can confuse new fans. They're like, well, hang on, what's going on? You've got MotoGP, you've got Moto 2, you've got Moto 3, you've got World Superbike. I don't understand. I mean, which is the most important? What matters? What, you know, what's going on here? So I kind of disagree. I think you've got to have one championship that is the championship that gets put up in headlights, and then the other championships, they're more for the super enthusiasts like us. You know, what we need is, you can make the sport bigger, richer, more commercialized without ruining it for the super fans. That's 100%. I mean, that's what we want, isn't it? We want the sport to stay the same for us, but to attract more people from outside, which will bring in more money. And, you know, like I say, an independent guy riding a Ducati should be earning more than 100 grand a year. You know what I mean?
Maybe it's a case of putting... So it's quite clear that, well, rumors suggest that, you know, the sprint races are quite taxing on the GP riders. So maybe it's a case of bringing Moto 3 races and Moto 2 races on a Saturday to encourage the spectators to come on Saturdays, and then having one main Moto GP race on a Sunday, right? As opposed to making it two races on a weekend and the dynamic that wow. has, right? I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how creative and flexible the executive committee would be. And again, it goes down to voting rights and who stays and who goes, and it gets all very interesting. But... We could see some interesting tests being applied here in that sense. I mean, we saw Liberty do it with the sprint races themselves, right? But MotoGP kind of just came in and said, this is what's happening, to deal with it. I mean, that works too, but who knows? I mean, so that would be an interesting way to get around it.
Yeah, I don't really like the sprint races because they put a lot of people in hospital. And we talk about how, sports is all about personalities now. You know, that's how you sell a sport to beyond the kind of super fans, by like, oh, that guy looks super cool, let's watch, you know. And if you kind of keep putting your superstars in hospital, that's not a good way to develop the sport, you know. And I know for the teams, and it's a fucking nightmare, you know, it's a nightmare. You know, they are all, you know, Bagnaia told me last year, we're all going to have shorter careers because we can't do this for very long. A, the pressure is just unbearable, and B, the injuries are going to be unbearable. So, you know, if riders are going to have shorter careers, that's not good for the promotion of the sport either, is it? You know, you want riders to have long careers, and then they can develop their characters. And you get somebody like Alonso, you know, who's now seen as the kind of dark man of, you know, the sort of bad guy of Formula One, and been around forever. And, you know, I always find as the riders get older, they get much more interesting. You know, you go and interview a 16, 17 year old Moto 3 rider, you know, they don't know how to tell a story to a journalist, you know, who's old enough to be their granddad. You know, they I remember Rins, when he came in MotoGP aged 20, 21, he was very boring. I went to a few of his debriefs and I thought, there's no point. You'd ask him a question and he would just duck it, wasn't interested. Now you go to one of his debriefs and he's grown up, he's comfortable in his own skin, he's you know, he's enjoying himself, he comes up with great answers, and he really enjoys doing it. So I, you know, you need people to stay around, so don't hurt the guys, don't hurt the riders, don't make them end their careers early. You know, it's just, to me, that's what I think about the sprint races. Anyway, maybe do them six a year. How about Moto 3 sprint races? That would be fun.
Is it already one big sprint race?
Oh. I'd like to see Moto.
Oh, you care a lot for the riders, I hear that, Matt. But not for Moto 3. That's already a lottery. That's Russian roulette anyway. You bastard. You put in two bullets.
Yeah.
Look, one thing I will say to you is for those that are listening that are purists, and, you know, there's typically a negative connotation around financial services and its effect it has on sports, and are worried about how it can ruin the sport. It's a very valid concern to have. And it sounds cliche to say, but change is typically uncomfortable for all of us. And, you know, this change will affect us three, our purists too, you know. But the exciting thing is that if it's done correctly, in a way that those that are involved at senior level work with the right people or advisors to understand the sport and to understand what people want, right? Whether it be regulations, whether it be in attendance at circuits, or whether it be in terms of the media that's digested, you can create a very compelling product that not only satisfies purists, but attracts new audiences, right? And that currently isn't being done, I believe. And we spoke about this last time, where you get a 100-page questionnaire from Dorna expected to be answered by us, and I dropped off eventually because this is ridiculous, right? And so there is a lot to play for. I think maybe it's a food for thought here, and Peter, it's probably directed at you because you mentioned you don't like the current technical regulations, is, around, do we feel that the current technical regulations are actually damaging our love for the sport as it is?
Yes. Yep.
Exactly. So,
well, not the regulations so much, but how some people have been very, very clever and kind of,
where to start,
driven a sort of large articulated lorry through the middle of them and kind of turned MotoGP bikes into something that they weren't meant to be. They're not meant to be. And I mean, let's just talk about the mass damper. That was banned in Formula One. The ride height regulator, that was banned in Formula One. What have we done? Like, no, go for it. Do it. You know, that's like, why? You know, Formula One's banned this stuff. Yeah. So why didn't MotoGP? It's just stupid, you know. And one of the issues we have now is that one manufacturer supplies a third of the grid and just has inordinate power to just say, well, if you don't do what I want to do, we're out of here, you know, with the technical rules. So it's, you know, Dorna or whoever owns MotoGP needs to kind of get the grid more balanced so one manufacturer doesn't have so much power over the whole system. You know, when there was that chance of bringing in an extra KTM team last year, so you would have had six Ducatis and six KTMs. It's like, go for it, make it happen, for God's sake. It's just an obvious thing to do, you know, but it didn't happen. So yeah, I think the governance of the sport could be better. I think, like I said, I think Dorna have done a fantastic job for 30 odd years, but I think it's time for a change. I really do.
Yeah, and I think I agree with you on that. I think there's lots to unpack in the coming weeks, or to be unveiled in the coming weeks, you know, and who the acquirer is, what that deal, the mechanics of that deal looks like. It might not be such public knowledge though. So, you know, keep your ears close to the ground, or at least the murmurs around the paddock, because those inevitably will be the minutiae that will have a direct impact on your overarching question is, what does this mean for existing fans? I don't see it getting worse on the technical side of things for the points you've just raised. Hopefully you see it getting better. But what we don't want to see is a World Series becoming only Europe, like World Superbikes basically is. And we don't want to see a single manufacturer championship, because that really detracts from what we do love and know. So it would be great to see the likes of Honda and Yamaha back at the sharp end. And, you know, the rumors of BMW coming in, and, you know, and MV Agusta coming in, and all those sorts of things. But inevitably, that's going to be driven by the swear word, which is begins with an M, which is money. And inevitably, that's a byproduct of sponsorship, and that's a byproduct of eyeballs and media attention and IP. And so, as you can see, the knock-on effect is there. So,
full circle.
I will say this again: there is a lot of opportunity for change. It's all about execution. And there are a lot of great people in the space that have been around the sport for many years, yourselves included, that I feel are relatively untapped. And hopefully a new acquirer does tap into these channels, because they exist for a reason, right?
One thing that amazed me about Dan Rossomondo, that he was, you know, I'm a humble freelance journalist, you know, and but I've been there a long time, 37 years or whatever. And Dan, like, he had his third race. He said, he got on my contacts and said, do you want to meet up for a coffee? And we just sat down and talked about MotoGP for an hour. You know, what can be done to make it better? Are there any problems? No other Dorna boss had ever done that in 32 years. You know what I mean? So, like, you know, if you're a good manager, you should be going around everyone in the paddock, you know, saying, you know, how do we make this better? How do we make this better? You know, what do you think? What do you think? You know, and that's the way, not just to think we know best, when we don't need to speak to anyone else because we know best. That's not a way to make things better. You know, it just simply isn't.
Just one last thing. Sitting in the paddock in VIP seats, right, from your ivory tower is not how majority of people consume MotoGP live. They sit in the stands and they buy their food and they want their merch, right? And you need to do that too, because that's your customer.
Yeah,
right?
You've got to go and speak to them.
Exactly. You can't have this disconnect, right? You've got to be at the coal face. And that's something that I think is inevitably the key message here, irrespective of whether you're at a race, whether you're buying the brand, whether you're changing the regulations, same thing.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have any other questions for Dario, Peter?
No. I'm still blown away a bit. Try to digest it.
55 minutes, something like that. That was great.
Wow.
Dario, thanks so much for coming on again. And, you know, maybe a bit further down the line, we'll have you back once the deal is done and once sort of we begin to see what's going to happen. Because, you know, you just see everything from, you know, you're a bike racer yourself, but you see stuff from the sort of money side that me and Peter kind of miss, really. So, yeah, it's been great having you on. Really great. And thanks to you. Thanks to Peter. Thanks to Sam, our highly paid producer. And thanks to all of you for listening, especially if you've got this far. Well done. Thanks very much. Bye-bye. See you or you will hear from us next Sunday. Cheers. Bye.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.